What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Surf and Sales Podcast. I am Scott Lease, one half of the duo that brings you this podcast and the Surf and Sales Summit. Check it out at surfandsales.com. I'm joined by my good friend, Richard Harris. What's going on, buddy?
Good to see you, my man. We haven't talked in a while. You were on vacation, then I was on vacation. And Scott, I actually got to do something pretty cool. I got to ski in Utah for spring break with my kids.
Really?
Yep. And then also in the same spring break, I went to Savannah, Georgia, did a little surfing. So I skied and surfed within a week's time.
That's like the most California thing that you could do.
Totally.
But you didn't do it in California, either one.
Yes. Because, you know, I'm from Georgia. So, that's what I could do.
But if you lived in Southern California, where our guest, Will Falkenberg, today on the Surf and Sales podcast lives, you could do that in one day. You know, you could drive 20 minutes to the beach and then drive an hour and a half to the mountains and surf and ski in the same day.
This is true. This is true.
The we'll California double right there, Richard.
There
the
it
California
is.
Double. We are, in fact, joined by an SDR leader at a company called Champify, which, fun fact, I'm actually an advisor to. Will may or may not know this. So the better Will does, technically, the better I do as well. So he's an SDR leader over at Champify and helps out my friend Todd. What's going on, Will? Welcome to the show, man.
Dude, howdy. Thank you for having me. Full discretion, I am an SDR. I just have the word lead in my title. And so I am the, I'm technically the number one SDR at Champify. So that's something I get to tell my wife every day.
That she ignores. She's like, yeah.
I want to start with the most interesting kind of factoid that we just picked up on. You are prone to making all of your cold calls wearing a hot dog suit/costume. Mm. Where did this tradition begin? What gave you the inspiration for it? And I guess most importantly, why do you still do it?
Yeah, I'm still figuring out the why behind me still doing it. But in terms of how I got it, so in 2022, I started as an SDR in October at a company called HG Insights. My wife is part of a mom's group, and oftentimes they'll be giving away things for a lot cheaper than you can get off of like Facebook Marketplace. So my wife comes up to me today. She's like, "Hey, like you don't have a Halloween costume. Do you want this like hot dog suit? It's only like $10. And I was like, why would I want that? And so she just bought it for me as a hot dog suit. We went and picked it up and I just let it sit in my car. And funny enough, I didn't even wear it for like another year and a half. I just gave it to my VP of sales to actually wear for his Halloween costume with his two daughters. And, you know, I got some brownie points there. In terms of how I used it and how I started using it, I just had it lying around in my office. One day I was going after the CMO who I spent like 30, 40 minutes personalizing emails to. I got zero response, one touch, two touch. I don't want to sound like a Dr. Seuss novel, but I called him, didn't answer, emailed him, didn't answer. You know, I just said, screw it. I was like, how can I stand out and actually get his attention to respond to my email? Because at the end of the day, if you're outbounding to a CMO, a marketer's job is to grab attention and put it onto their product, right? If I can't even get this person's attention, how are they even going to look at the email I spent 30 to 40 minutes on? And so I just wrote an email, just took a picture of me in the hot dog suit. I'm like, hey, I've spent this time doing XYZ homework. I'd really relish if you took that chance to check it out. And it's just me in a hot dog suit. It was like, after that, like I got a response. You know, I was like, oh, great email, blah, blah, blah. Like I saw you wearing the hot dog suit and it clicked for me, right? I'm like, the hot dog suit isn't just like some weird thing I do. Like the reason I still wear the hot dog suit here and there, and I don't wear it for all my cold calls, you know, just putting that out there, because it's not like they can see me wearing the hot dog suit. It's like, it's a testament to like, always look to stand out in some way, right? Because no matter what you do, you can spend as much time as you want with the perfect business acumen, complete understanding of their problems. If they don't read your email or it doesn't catch their attention, it's all to waste.
Yeah.
And so the hot
very,
dog.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hot dog is a testament to just keep doing that.
So question, you know, you started in 2022 and now it's 2024 and you've been through some ups and downs, right? to say the least. what's getting people's attention? What's breaking through the noise, right? Again, mm-hmm. because everybody's spending too much time researching. They're thinking that AI is going to solve the outbound problem for emails, and maybe it helps. What are you finding successful in the 2024 market?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what I'm finding successful the most, I'd say, is like authentic human connection, right? Like, as cringy as that sounds, it's like the only way to go toe to toe with like an AI bot or an AI written email that looks really good is to have that authentic connection. And the fastest way I'm able to do that is via the phones. And so every week I look at breaking into 6 or 7 accounts, 700 employees and up. I don't email any of those people until I've had a conversation or two to understand, first of all, like how they're doing their current, for example, how they're tracking past customers is going to be relevant to me because I can find a problem within that because it has second and third order consequences. And once I figured out if there is a problem based off of how they're currently doing it via a cold call, I can leverage that conversation to go to all of the right individuals instead of wasting my time writing emails, trying to just follow up over and over again with 3 different divisions within a company across 20 different people. When I can talk to one person and get an understanding of who to reach out to with what message. And so I don't even email a company or like an individual for 3 to 5 days after I've called them. And then within those 3 to 5 days, if I'm calling into an account, I'm leveraging these conversations to get to the right individuals and connecting with them on LinkedIn. I mentioned-
So hold on, slow down. So you identify the decision maker and then you just call other people at random in the company?
Well, I don't know. A lot of the times I don't know who the decision maker is. With Champify-
So you're just calling random people in the company with the assumption of this is my ICP. Is that
okay? Let me take a step back. And so at Champify, the way we break into accounts is either with sales leaders, ops leaders, or marketing leaders. So right. I'm calling into these 3 groups, typically director and up. For I don't want to call a sales director at Appian, right? It's going to mean nothing to me. I'm calling VPs of sales and up, typically directors of sales operations and up, and then directors of marketing and up to get an understanding of, hey, what function of the business or something like Champify lie in? And then from there, once I've had that understanding, I can tap into that specific function of the business.
So is the message there something to the effect of like, hey, Will, not sure if you're the right person to talk to about this or not. Got a quick question for you. And then you dig in and you start learning a little bit.
So I can actually dive into that message. And so every account I go after, I rely on my head of growth to understand and determine whether it's a good fit account. And so, especially with a company of our size, and like SDRs don't have the time to go research every single one of their 50-100 accounts in depth. And so I rely on Taylor, who is our head of growth, to use Clay and a fundamental understanding of, hey, do they have great G2 reviews? Do they have a widely adopted product? Or are they shifting from a PLG to an outbound motion, hiring new sales reps and SDRs? And typically from there, I can understand, hey, is this a great account? And then I'll go into that cold call with a message of saying, hey, I caught you at a bad time. You were not expecting my call, and this is the first time I've reached you. Was just hoping for a minute to explain why I did some prep for this introduction. If it's not of interest, I'll never call you back. From there, I'll go into the prep I've done for that based off of all the reviews I know and have surfaced in front of me. And then I'll go into the process of how they're doing it. Typically, I can leverage this conversation to understand where within the business this falls. If I'm calling a VP of sales dev, I can talk about how their SDRs are doing it. If they're not the right person, great. I'll get them on a meeting and then throw it out to the marketing team or the ops team.
That's amazing. That's really, really good. So Scott, as an advisor, are you feeling very optimistic now about your advisory shares, knowing that this is Will's
I've been feeling pretty optimistic for a while, but yeah, this is good confirmation.
All right. So Will, here's the next question. What magic pill are you using to make people pick up the phone? Because that's the big challenge I see these days.
You know, that's a great question.
Are you using a Ouija board? Like, you know, you know, how's that? Or is it just, you know what? We've targeted the right accounts. They're this big, this size. So statistically, we know they have phones and we have their phone numbers from all your sources and all that kind of stuff.
And so what I found is when typically people have a larger influx of dopamine throughout their body, they're more likely to have a conversation with you, they're more likely to talk with you, and they're more likely to pick up the phone. That being said, like I usually like my best time to call is at happy hour on a Friday. A lot of people will get off the phone at like 3 or
Yes.
4 p.m. Like if you're calling them from that 5 to 7 p.m., like you're going to get one or two people who are just really mad at you. But if you're calling someone and then they're like, yeah, I'll pick up the phone. Like, oh, my wife's on vacation with the kids. I'll pick it up. I can't even tell you. I book meetings at 7:30 p.m. their time. And it's
I see
like,
you post about this on LinkedIn all the time. I really do see you talk about this. It's
yeah.
amazing.
And so I think it's timing, right? You have to have good phone numbers, right? If you're just using a large contact database, that's
Right.
whole sole purpose is quantity of contacts. Yeah, you're probably not going to get great phone number quality. But using a tool like Upsell, which is like UPSELL, not up SELL, or a tool like Cognizant is going to get you the best phone numbers possible. So obviously, like, hey, you need to be calling the right phone numbers, right? But you also need to be calling them at a time they're more likely to pick up. Friday, you can call anytime you darn want. I mean, I've looked at SDR leaders, sales leaders' schedules on a Friday. It's typically a lot more open. During the week, I only call after around 4:30 p.m. their time. And so I really start hitting the phones at 1:30 Pacific, and then I keep going until about 5:30 to 6,
So what are
depending
you
on
doing all
whether or not my
morning?
wife is yelling at me to come help.
Right.
Great question, man. And so all morning, dude, it's my calendar is just reminder, reminder, reminder.
Just
It's
remember
bad. I
your
don't,
CEO and founder might listen to this, so you better make sure you're
yeah,
busy.
I don't know. Okay, I'll walk you through my schedule. So I wake up around 6:30. I lay in bed until 7:30, and I'm just playing with my kid. He likes to cuddle and like have his bottle. And then I let my wife sleep in, right? That is the best investment. That first hour of the day is the absolute best thing I can do at that time because it knows like I'm not going to need to take more time out of work to go help because she's gotten rest and she can handle it, right? After that, I start essentially multi-threading, writing emails and sending LinkedIn messages. I'm big on videos. I have this lucky whiteboard right next to me. I'll send videos with it. I'll put on my hot dog costumes to send a video. I sent a video to a CMO the other day, just being completely straightforward and monotone. But then I'm wearing the hot dog too. It's just like it's fun doing that without making any reference to it because it's like, wait, he's not talking about it, but he's like, what he's saying makes sense, but he's just wearing something weird. So that's usually how I start my morning. It's more of like understanding, hey, how can I build lead lists? How can I do these activities to set me up for the rest of my day?
I love this. I love this. I think it's so obvious that everybody's calendars tends to be a little more open on Fridays, and yet we've always thought, oh, nobody's going to pick up the phone on a Friday.
Well,
Well,
it's also because we've thought, I don't want to make cold calls on a Friday
right,
afternoon.
us too. Right, I don't want to work either.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Right. So, super
You find
counterintuitive.
ways to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
And then you tell yourself this story. Nobody else does either. So nobody will pick up the phone. So I probably shouldn't pick up the phone.
So, Will, what got you interested in sales, right?
Yeah.
Was this your first sales job in 2022? Like, what were you doing before that? And what got you interested in sales?
Yeah. So I think this starts, and I'm gonna make a reference to the seller's journey. It's like there's never like a class in school about learning sales, right? I remember there was actually a club at San Diego State for sales, and I had a finance degree when I was working on my finance degree. I looked at that club and I was like, what do those guys think they're doing? Like, why don't they just focus on their degree? And it didn't make sense to me until later because I graduated college. We were going to have a kid. And I'm like, I don't have a job. What do I do? And
Sound
so,
familiar, Scott?
yeah,
Sure does.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what now? And so I think you said most people just stumble into it, right? I'm more of like set up a brick wall and try to ram my head through it because I was applying to hundreds of job applications every day, just hitting that little manual apply. And then one day I just decided just to move because my wife and I, we didn't live together. Like my wife had two other roommates. She was in Santa Barbara. I was back home. I had no money in my bank account. I think I had like, my mom gave me like a couple $1,000. So like, hey, this is it. Go figure it out. So I just moved
Scott,
in
is
with my
this your little
wife.
brother? Is this your little brother? Is this your
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually we might be related. I'm not sure. And so I just moved in with her. I said, hey, I'm going to burn the boats if I want to take the island. And I started applying in person, dropping off like my resume, and I actually got an interview to be like a wealth planner for $22 an hour. And I just remember like thinking, this is it. And then they told me, and like, hey, you're the perfect app, but we just can't take you. And I just broke down in my car. And then I remember this whole time I've been seeing these job applications for being an SDR. And I started applying to them a lot and then actually taking the interviews and doing pretty well on them. Like I would go into every one of them saying, like, hey, my main going in here, I'm gonna be your top performer no matter what. I'll make more calls than anyone else, make more emails than anyone else. I just was very extremely straightforward with it. And I think a couple of the managers I talked to kind of like didn't like that. They almost took offense to it because I said, hey, I want to be the best sales rep. I want to be the best manager possible. Like my goal is one day to like, I just want to get to the top however I can. And so I actually lost like three interviews that way. The last one, I remember this conversation very well. It basically told me I didn't have what it took to be an SDR. And that's why he kept drilling me with all these questions because he's like, hey,
So
I feel
wait,
like you
somebody
don't.
actually told you that?
Yeah, yes. And so
Yeah.
he's an SDR manager at a cybersecurity company. Anytime I ever get a
That's
shout out,
great.
like whether it's from Kyle Coleman, or ever I'm on a podcast, I always tag him in it.
I
Because
love that.
I don't
You
know,
wait,
I'm
you
kind of
tagged this
petty.
guy?
Yeah.
That level of pettiness is something that I respect tremendously.
What bravado, man.
Yeah.
I feel you. Yeah.
I love it. I do
I
the
think
same
there's
thing.
two
Listen,
things. Go ahead.
I can remember two times where something very similar happened to me. One of them was somebody told me that, quote, Scotty's little sales club would never make it. This was somebody who was basically ripping my leadership style and approach and whatnot. I know exactly where I was when they said it, what year it was, all that kind of good stuff. And I remember I took one interview with a company at ADP 20-something years ago, and the guy I interviewed with basically said, you'll never be a salesperson, you don't have what it takes, da, da, da. And I am as petty as you, and I remember these things, and I've talked about them. I even renamed an entire sales community of mine Scotty's Little Sales Club just to kind of rub their nose in it. So that story totally resonates with me, and I've used it as motivation for decades now, and it sounds like you use it as motivation as well.
Yeah. I think okay, I do want to explain how I got the
I just
job.
love that he tags the guy in his LinkedIn post. Like
To
he has that motivation
be
from
fair,
Scott.
that's a level of petty that I actually can only aspire to.
Right,
I've
but
never
that's
actually done that.
you align Will very well with Scott in one regards, and then tagging someone is 100% what Richard wants to do and probably has done. Like it's the, he's like our melded mini me child, Scott.
He's our younger adopted brother.
Yes.
We're mold, we're
Yeah.
molding him. We're molding him. Yeah. So
Yeah.
you said you want to make it to the top. You somehow lost job opportunities by expressing this level of like ambition and whatnot, which is a whole other thing. Let's fast forward 5, 10, 20 years. You're at the quote unquote top. What does that mean? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I used to think I wanted to be at the top, right? But then I lived a different life, right? I was expecting a child. I never had the child. I was just living life at a slower pace because I was that's the pace my wife would walk at because it's kind of hard to walk fast when you've got another 20, 30 pounds on you. I always thought I wanted to be at the top because I'd make more money. More money would mean I'd have a more opportunities with my family, which is true, but I always thought I would come at expense to that, right? And so what the top looks like to me now, it's no longer like, hey, I want to be the CRO. It's more like, hey, I want to be in any position that enables me to have one, time with family, and two, freedom to do what we want. And so I used to want to be like, I used to want to own the entire go-to-market organization. Like I wanted to know ops really well. I wanted to be the best SDR, be the best seller, be the best SDR leader, be the best sales leader over time. But I've thought about this a lot. I've been chewing on it. It's like I don't want to do that if it comes to the expense of my time with my two new kids. Like this is time I'll never get back. I can always go and take on a new job offer. I can always go and do that. But my 1 year-old is only gonna be 1 year-old for a year, technically, right? He's only gonna be 13 months old for a month. my 1-year-old is only be 1 month old for a month, right? I only have that time, and it's so finite. Like when I get older, when I'm not older, but when I'm young, like you guys, I don't want to look back on my life and wish I spent more time with them. I'm like, when I'm dead, when I'm lying there on my deathbed looking at my kids, hopefully it's like 5 to 6, maybe 7. I don't want to think, oh, I wish I spent more time with you when I was a young dad. I'm going
Do
to
you think it,
wish.
but do you think it's actually possible not to think that?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's
You
possible to
do.
think that if you live a fulfilled life and you learn, because like regret comes from some sort of action, right? Or lack thereof, in my opinion. Like all the things I've regretted in life, like when I was 16 years old, like I was supposed to go swimming to a pool with my dad, like that day. And then like my dad drowned that day. I didn't go swim with him. And like that the cost of an action to me is like something that lives with me every single day. And so what I mean by that in terms of regret comes from inaction or lack thereof. Like I don't want to have that feeling of like, hey, I wasn't there for this. I wasn't there for this. Because if you do that, that's something you'll think about like every single day, multiple times a day for the rest of your life. And so that's kind of like why my viewpoint has shifted in terms of where I want to be, which is at the top.
Yeah, I just every conversation or interview that I've seen or heard or had with people who are at that stage where they're on their way out of this life, where they know it is imminent, nobody doesn't say, "I wish I had more time with so and so." My kids or whatever, even if they spent all of their time when they were younger with their kids, their family, their loved ones. I understand what you're saying though. Is there any part of you that, given what you went through at a young age, losing your father, is there any part of you that looks at the work that you're doing now and the life that you're building now, and thinks like, what would my dad be thinking about this? Am I honoring his memory? Would he be proud? Would he be telling me to do something different? Is that a motivating factor for you in how you go about your
Yeah.
day?
Yeah, 1,000%. So a few of the conversations I had like with my father too before he passed away was like, I've never been good at something, right? I've never been great at something. I've always been like generally good at almost everything, right? I
Yeah,
was like
good at a
decent at
lot, great at
basketball,
nothing.
but I was never great.
Yeah, good
Exactly.
at a
And so
lot,
like that's not
never
where I
great
wanted
at
to
it.
be. And so I mean, one of the things he always told me is like, hey, you just have to go all in on one. Like, I have to go all in on one thing. And the thing he went all in on was when he was my age, it's like he was just running around doing sales, like going company to company, door to door. And he was really great at it. And that was one of the things I was like, oh, like, hey, worst case scenario, I could always just do that and kind of like follow in the same path, right? I could almost take that, not for lack of better terms, I could almost take the same seller's journey. See what I did there.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
And
that's
so
twice.
when and so when I think about it, it's like when I stumbled upon cold calling, like the first day I did it, like the first week I ever did it, I booked 7 meetings, second week I booked 14. And then it's like the first day I did it, it just clicked. I'm like, I love this. I've spent my entire childhood like being that prankster, being that idiot in class who talks out too loud. I've gone and sat in jacuzzis and just spoken with people like 80 or 90 years old for just hours on end. And like, this is like what I love to do, is just like authentically connect and talk to people. And so when I had that like first cold call, I was just like, this is it. Like, this is what I like to do. This is my like the most enjoyable thing I've ever done related to work. I used to work at Pizza Hut and I would like eat chicken wings off the ground when I dropped them instead of like putting them back in people's orders. I'm like, this is not what I want to do,
Well, thank
right?
you. Thank you for not putting it back,
Yeah.
those chicken wings
Yeah.
back in my order. So.
And so I guess to answer your question, like I think you'd be proud because like one, I found something I love to do and I'm doing it and I'm helping other people do it like as well. Like a lot of people come to me and ask, like, hey, how like, let me have a call later today for 30 minutes just to do cold calling training for free. It's because I love to do it. And so I think that the fact that I'm able to do that while providing for my two kids and kind of like expanding that legacy is I think you would be proud of that.
That's amazing, dude. That's kudos to you. And way to turn such a tragedy into something so positive, and way to honor him in so many ways. So that's amazing. So you don't want to be, and you know, it's interesting because I was listening to you talk about being at the top, right? And originally it sounded like at the top meant owning the organization. Now it seems like being at the top is whatever that current role is, right? I'm at the top of being the SDR leaderboard, or I'm going to be at the top. Do you aspire to move into sales? Do you aspire to go to that next level? Or, you know, are you, you know, what do you think about in terms of your career?
Yeah, I actually do aspire to that. I mean, I am still reading the seller's journeys. I'm not all the way through it. I am taking like Chris Warlob's P Club IO course, Kyle Acey's AE frameworks. I'm trying to learn as much as I can. I'm starting to run discovery calls, and I am training for it. I do want to sell, right? It's an untapped market for me. I've spent so much time on the surface, right? But it comes to a point where, hey, like I'm authentically connecting with all these people, but there's no depth to it, right? Like there's only so much time I can spend with a VP of sales or a VP of marketing. Whereas if I'm a seller, I can go all the way through the funnel, right? And understand, hey, what are your actual problems and how can I fix them? And just instead of identifying them, right?
Yep.
And so I do aspire to go down the funnel. I'm actually in training to do that right now. And so that should be coming up in a few months.
Yeah. I think you're ready, in my opinion. It's time for someone to give you the shot. Sure, you can keep learning and maybe there's a couple of tweaks along the way, but you're probably pretty skilled at it, probably more than you even believe yourself at this stage. So don't over educate before you push the move. And granted, within the company, you might have to wait till they're ready to grow too. So I know you well enough to know you're probably not going to try and bail on where you're at to go somewhere else. So let's kind of getting close towards the end. You know, what do you want to ask us? Because I know you always like to ask questions and do stuff. So let's spend a few minutes with you asking us stuff.
All right, Scott, I do want to ask you, because when my buddy Brandon Jepson and I, we have like a community for dads in tech called Tech Dads, and we did a little webinar with Richard a while back, and he mentioned he knew some of your darkest secrets. So I want to hear like, what are some of those darkest secrets, Scott, that come to mind, and how have those impacted you as a seller?
Ooh, wow. That is 5 years into this, and that's the best question that's ever been asked.
I got to process this for a second. First of all, what the fuck did Richard tell you? That's my
sign
first
and yeah.
Darkest secret. I guess one of my darkest secrets would be that when I first got into sales leadership, I only had one move, one play, whatever you want to call it. It's like if you're playing basketball and you could only go to your left and do the same shot. That was it. That was all I had. And my move was basically like, work harder, you know? That was it. It was like, you could do more, you could work harder, we could figure it out. And it was very much like a coming from my sports background of like trying to fire people up and, you know, just through like sheer willpower, try to make things happen. And nowadays that mortifies me that was the only thing that I knew how to do. I didn't get any sales leadership coaching or guidance. There was no podcast to listen to. There was no LinkedIn advice being doled out every single day. So I didn't know what the fuck to do. I just got like thrown into this sales management role. And I'm like, come on, Will, let's go. We got to make this happen, you know? And that was it. And, you know, I was tough. A lot of people who worked for me didn't love it, let's just say, at all, especially if they were not at a place in their life where they were ready to try to do something like really special and change their life. People that were, you know, even though they didn't love it, they still did it because they were at the right place. And a lot of those people have come back to me now and said, man, you were a fucking asshole back then, but now I never learned more. I never did better. I'm so glad that, you know, I worked under you when I did. But yeah, you were tough. So yeah, that's a dark, dirty secret, I guess, is like, I was not very good by modern standards when I was a sales leader initially, and there's a lot of things that I would do differently. And now it's impacted me because I try to rail and rage against a lot of those kinds of things. And as I grew and got more experience and matured a little bit, I adjusted and I led subsequent teams differently. And coincidentally, the last three teams that I led had the best outcomes when I was a VP of sales, as I continued to evolve and adjust. So draw a correlation there however you like. But yeah, there's my answer for you.
I do have a follow-on question. So when we met with Richard, he mentioned that he ended up when he had a career change, he ended up taking a lower paying job under you.
Yeah.
This is a question both for you, but I'm going to start with Richard. Richard, what was your biggest pet peeve about Scott as a manager?
Wow. How much time do we have left?
Is this a setup? Are we being punked right now?
I don't know, dude, but this is like the best people have ever asked us about this kind of stuff. The biggest pet peeve probably was my own insecurity, because I felt like I could do what Scott was doing and better, because I'd already been a VP of sales and running sales teams. And I would see him do things that I was like, dude, you can't do that. You can't say that. These dark things that Scott was talking about, like, you know, and so it was just, you know, and it was frustrating, right? That was probably it. I also think the grind it required was not something even I was used to. And, you know, it is no joke that we came in on Saturdays and we worked from home on Saturdays, even as managers. There is a time, you know, I was, you know, he made all the managers of the sales teams get on the phone and do cold calling, which at that stage of my career, I was already, you know, just gone from VP of sales to a sales manager. So my ego was just shot. And I was like, oh, really? This is so beneath me, which, in the big picture, it was not. It was a great learning lesson. You know, this is 15 years ago. So, you know, but I was 40 and thought that, wow, you know, do I really have to do this? What is this? This sucks. This is terrible. But I did it. And so I think that was those pet peeves. Those were my pet peeves, was sort of the old school way of managing that I thought was not necessarily the best. To Scott's point, though, the right people, the right time, it worked for them. I think that was a big piece of it. So
I thought for sure Richard was going to say all the times I told him to get off his computer and go coach somebody.
No, that's a pet peeve too, but I was going a little more deep. I was trying to, you know, go a little deeper. So
are you going to ask me now what my biggest pet peeve about Richard was as an employee?
Or I don't still think is. I need to. Yeah. I was going to say, I think you asked yourself right there.
Scott, this guy's brilliant, man. Will is like you. He's thinking seven steps ahead of us.
I walked right into it. I actually don't remember what my biggest pet peeve about Richard was, to be honest with you.
So
I really don't. I'd be making something up. I'm sure there was plenty, but I really don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you're going to have to ask a different question, Will.
Okay. This is something I think about a lot of the time. Scott, what's your biggest regret in life?
Ooh.
And you can't say I have none, because I live my life without regret. You can't.
No,
you can't
I actually would never say that, and I hate people who say that.
Yeah,
actually.
Me too.
This I'm pausing because I'm trying to think and reflect a little bit here. Biggest regret in life. I think about
hiring Richard. Probably
sometimes
taking this meeting.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do sometimes regret that I got sick and that I lost 4 years of my life. That's not necessarily something that I could have done something about or changed, but it is a regret. In a lot of ways, you know, I never got to experience my early 20s. I never got to I don't know, try a couple different careers and fail at them or whatever. I never got to, I don't know, all the things that people in their early 20s do. I didn't get to do these kinds of things, both professionally and personally and whatnot. And it's, you know, it set me back in a lot of ways. You know, I think to myself right now, like, imagine if I was 4 years younger, but where I am right now. I play that game sometimes. So I think I would be lying if I said I don't have moments where I regret all that stuff that I went through. There's obviously been a million and one benefits to it as well, but you know, I'm human. I think about those that type of thing sometimes. Yeah. Tough questions, man. Tough questions. By Will.
Do I have time for more?
Yeah. Go for it.
Last one. Okay. Then we got to wrap up and get out of here.
Well, it's more of a follow on, but obviously you had the regret from those 4 years approximately. The reason why I'm asking it is because, like, for example, when I started as an SDR and I guess my quote unquote top of the funnel sales career, it was more of like, hey, I need to get my shit, or I need to get my SHIT together now or else I'm screwed. Walk me through kind of like what that looked like when you first started and kind of how you dealt with those emotions of, hey, I just, the last 4 years of my life have been not wasted, but I didn't get to get where I wasn't where I wanted to be. How did you deal with that? And kind of how did that start out?
Well, I sort of took the viewpoint of, I actually have now a superpower and an advantage over other people because my sense of urgency is far superior than everybody else now. My appreciation for each opportunity, I think, is stronger than other people. The ability to have perspective that the hardest thing that I'm going to go through is hopefully, knock on wood, in the past, and I've already defeated it, allows me to feel free and confident about whatever I'm facing moving forward. So the idea of, you know, missing quota and getting fired, that's really was never that big of a fear to me. You know, the idea of missing my number or missing my goal, it's like, whatever. I just fought 4 years of my life. You think you can scare me about not having a job? You know, even when I went to start my consulting business, Richard will tell you, it took me a long time to get brave enough to do it. But when I finally did it, my attitude was, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I suck at this. I fail and I have to go get a VP of sales job. Oh, well. So the ability to look at things through that lens of what's the worst thing that can happen, knowing that you've already been through and overcome the worst thing that could happen. All of these things, I think, gave me an advantage. And I used to walk into the office and look around at everybody in their cube and their desk and just think, these fucking people are just happy to be here. I'm going to destroy them because I'm not just happy to be here. I'm happy to be here, but I'm on a mission. And that was my mindset. And on some level, I think that's still my mindset because I feel like all of this could be taken from me at any point in time. And so I've got to take advantage of it while I'm able.
That's amazing. I just love the fact that I got none of these questions. They're all Scott, and Scott had to think deep and hard today. So he's exhausted. I can see by the look on his
mental
face.
Mental exhaustion is what you see right on my face. Yeah,
totally. Right. Totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Surf and Sales podcast. You know, where can people find you? Where can they find your hot dog outfit? What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to get some advice from you?
Yeah, just hit me up on LinkedIn. It's just Will with a spelled with a W. Don't forget that. And then Falcon Borga, and look me up. There should be a hot dog next to my name on LinkedIn, but send me a connect on LinkedIn. We can hang out.
Will awesome, Falkenborg, man. Everybody. Number one SDR at Champify. We appreciate you spending some time with us today. And we'll see everybody next time on the Surf and Sales podcast.
Thanks, Will.
Smell you later.